when you're riding after rattlesnakes, you gotta be tough. You gotta be rough. You gotta shoot straight. Be on the lookout. The James Gang is back in town, and they're meaner than ever. There's Brother Eli. He stomped down many a snake in his day, and he ain't done yet. His younger brother Dave, quicker than a horned toad, he can hunt down a snake's lie. Then there's Sister Jean. She can whip out a scripture faster than a Colt 45. Wanted, dead or alive, they'll be coming for you. It's the James Gang on EuroFolkRadio.com.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. The James Gang is back again. Today is March 4th, 2017. And today we're going to continue our series on Hitler versus the Jews of the Versailles Treaty. And I think a good title for today's show, David, is Undoing the Injustices of the Versailles Treaty, which virtually no historian ever covers, right?
I wonder why.
Yeah, all we ever hear is Hitler wanted to rule the world, therefore he started attacking countries, right? This is the simplistic notion we get from mainstream historians. It's absolutely ridiculous, folks. It's ridiculous. We have to laugh. First, I'm going to, it's one of the second to last items that I listed in the Skype chat, David. Why did France and Britain accede to Germany's demands in Sudetenland? Okay, and this is from the Quora site. And about a third of the way down, there's a couple of items by one by Mike Farkas, and then one by Viet Ni Puvan, a Buddhist. And those are the two best comments in the site. I'm going to quote by Mike Farkas first. Written on January 17, 2013, very briefly, France and Britain let Germany get away with what it did, such as increasing navy size, gaining Czechoslovakia, etc., because essentially they thought Germany would stop there and not expand further. With the case of increasing Germany's navy and submarine size, Britain did not feel that threatened, since it had the most powerful navy in the world. Britain allowed the Germans to have a navy size equal to a certain percentage of her own size. That was nice of them. With the case of Morovia, Czechoslovakia, the area was quite a bit German also. Now we're getting to the height of the heart of the matter, okay? Just as we found out in the Danzig Corridor, which was German, ethnically German, and those ethnic Germans were being persecuted and genocided by the Poles and the Jews, that country belonged to Germany. It was illegally taken away from Germany by the Versailles Treaty. Okay? So Hitler, so this is back in 1938, before the Germans invaded Poland to save the lives of all those Germans. Okay? Hitler was negotiating peacefully to regain territory that had been illegally taken from Germany by the Versailles Treaty, by the Jews of the Versailles Treaty. Okay? So, and then this area was ethnically German, you know, with the Lederhosen and the beer halls. It was German to the core, right? But it was arbitrarily given to Czechoslovakia, a country which didn't even exist before World War I, by the Versailles Treaty. Okay? I mean, so Hitler had every right to reclaim lands which were illegally stolen from Germany by the Jews of the Versailles Treaty. He had every right, and he was doing it peacefully, okay, in 1938. And I think Chamberlain was one of the few British diplomats who understood that Germany had a right to reclaim this territory, okay? The French had invaded the Ruhr, you know, in the interim between World War One and Two, so that the Germans couldn't produce any steel and other goods. I mean, the allies of the Versailles Treaty, the let's call them the Versailles Enforcers. The Versailles Enforcers were guilty of all kinds of criminal actions against the German people up into World War II, including for the very first day after the Versailles Treaty. Okay? This is the reality of what the German people faced, and Hitler was the only one standing up for the rights of the German people. Okay? So the history we're given by the mainstream historians is thoroughly inadequate and doesn't give Hitler the proper credit for trying to establish a peaceful return to Germany, including its people, of the things stolen from Germany by the Versailles Treaty. Okay? So this guy is kind of soft-pedaling this argument here. Britain basically handed the country over to Hitler, it says, but that country belonged to Germany anyway. There are a number of other things that I cannot think of, he says, but then this Vietnam Puvan, a Buddhist from Vietnam, obviously, he says, the Versailles Treaty had been very harsh on Germany, and the British and French insistence, which was anything but toothless, it was very violent and militaristic, that Germany continue to pay reparations in the midst of the Great Depression, that insistence had caused a humanitarian disaster in Germany and caused feelings in Germany to run very high. Now, that's an honest assessment by a Vietnamese person. France would have taken a much harder line on Germany but was not going to do anything without Britain taking the lead. British public opinion was not going to go along with forceful action against Germany, so Britain repeatedly let it slide when Hitler rearmed Germany, repudiated the Versailles Treaty, and started demanding various areas that had previously belonged to Germany. And that includes the Alsace-Lorraine area, which had previously belonged to Germany and taken over by France. So, I mean, there was all kinds of territory and German people disenfranchised from Germany proper as a result of the Versailles Treaty. And this in the face of the fact, David, that Woodrow Wilson came to the Versailles Treaty stating that all ethnic communities have a right to their own land, right? So, to the right, a right to self-determination. There was no right to self-determination for the German people at the Versailles Treaty at all. None.
They had no representative there for themselves.
Right. They didn't. And the representatives that they had were communist Jews, right?
Well, that was a division, a division of many kinds all at once. It was a division of Germany's land, and they knew that this would come up again because they didn't get their little land over there in World War One, which was the plan, and it didn't work. So they had to create another war. And they knew who was the perfect candidate to aggravate.
Yeah.
And they knew that they had people on both sides. They had the Poles on one side, and they had France on the other side. So they could aggravate them from both angles.
Yeah, yeah.
And
go ahead.
So this division that was caused was weakened Germany. And that was the idea. Mm-hmm. But it also tempted them, you see, because they deliberately mistreated the people in those areas.
That's right.
So that, you know, Hitler decided, well, I want to help my people. I'm not going to let them suffer there. I'm not just going to stand here and watch them be tormented and killed and everything else. So, you know, they knew what they were doing. They knew that they were going to try to start this Second World War. And they wanted to blame him for it. Which they did anyway, even if it wasn't true, as we found out. We know who started the war. We know who financed the ability to start the war. And we know where it came from because we've proved it in past shows in this ever-ongoing series.
Yes.
So the divisions have to be healed up. But when the treaty was made, it was made to divide the world against Germany. Never mind divide up Germany.
That's right.
But to cause the rest of the world to look at Germany You know, and as it came out, look what happened after the war.
Right.
Now Germany is the most evil.
Yeah.
Hitler's the most evil entity that ever lived in the history of mankind. Right. And these evil Nazis who obeyed every treaty.
Yeah. So it's funny.
Weren't evil at all.
Yeah. It's funny that a Vietnamese historian can see the injustice of the Versailles Treaty where this American guy can't. Right? So
I don't understand it. I can't understand that at all.
Yeah.
They're liars or they're just, I mean, could they be that blind? Seriously.
Yeah. Right. And he even mentions Wilson here. The Wilsonian principles of self-determination applied only to the subjects of the former German and Austro-Hungarian empires, by the way, which is why I think that Woodrow Wilson was a hypocrite.
Oh, do I you?
Well, no, that's him writing. That's the Vietnamese guy. I agree. Right?
Oh, yeah, I agree, too. I was just joking. Do you think he's a hypocrite?
Oh, no doubt. And worse,
he's a Jew.
He's
what
a
else
bastard.
More could he be but a hypocrite?
He is a Jew bastard hypocrite. They don't get any worse than that. Okay, and he continues.
Well, his promises didn't come true.
No.
I promise not to get your sons involved in
the
war.
He was lying about that. Yeah. As a total liar, total Jew puppet, just like FDR. Okay, so they used FDR in the same way for World War II as they used Wilson for World War I. And but if anything, FDR was even a more willing puppet than Wilson. Okay, Wilson had to be bribed into it and blackmailed into it, where FDR was a pro-communist, pro-Zionist from the get-go. You know, his whole entire career.
It was the same campaign thing, too. I promise not to get your sons into the war.
Well,
but you know what's just about the whole thing that I love?
Okay.
I love the fact that he died in that administration.
Yeah.
And that he was reserved to a wheelchair. And that was justice itself, you know, setting, you know, judgment of Yahweh just prejudgments, a nice couple of little light things.
Right.
Wait till later.
Plus, he married his cousin. it's a good thing they didn't have any children. Oh, man, what a wreck. What a wreck of a human being FDR was. But, of course, he was a Jew puppet, so that's probably the only thing he could do in life, right? But here,
and they touted him as a great man, didn't they? Isn't he one of the greatest presidents of all time?
It's amazing.
I mean, Andrew Jackson, he led those Indians on the Trail of Tears. Oh, what an evil man.
Yeah.
You see, the only reason that happened with the Trail of Tears is because those Indians would not cohabitate.
Mm-hmm.
They would not obey. They would not listen. So he let him out of there. If you're not going to obey and you're not going to, it wasn't like he just walked in and said, let me just be evil to these people.
Mm-hmm. Well, plus
he was the best president ever.
Plus he stopped the Second National Bank from regaining a charter. So from that moment on, you know that not a single kind word would ever be written about Andrew Jackson, right? So, but Jewish history has been very kind to FDR. And they're strangely silent about Wilson. You don't hear much about Wilson or about any of the presidents right after Wilson, right? So, but FDR was a total Jew puppet. So was LBJ. So we've had a series of Jew puppets that have been disastrous for America. But this Vietnamese author states, Czechoslovakia was an artificial country that owed its existence to the Versailles Treaty. Amen. Couldn't have said it better myself. The other one was Yugoslavia. Czechoslovakia included Czechs, Slovaks, Poles, and Germans, none of whom particularly liked each other. So why make a country out of a bunch of people who don't like each other?
Oh, why do that today?
Yeah.
Why bring in Muslims? Oh, why do you think they're doing that? You know, why bring in all these blacks and all these different races that don't want to live with one another? Why are we doing that?
Yeah.
I mean, we aren't doing it. Why are they doing that?
Yeah.
For the same reason they're doing it today.
Yeah.
That's why they did that. They knew those people didn't want to live together. They wanted to kill each other.
Yeah. Well, this is the exact opposite of ethnic self-determination. Obviously, right? Forcing four different ethnic groups to live among each other when they don't like each other or don't have the same traditions and probably not the same religion either, right? Then he continues, the only good thing that Czechoslovakia had going for her is that she was democratic. Now, he doesn't know what democracy really is. All right. Not sure how long Czechoslovakia would have held out against Hitler, given that neither ethnic Germans, the ethnic Poles, ethnic Slovaks felt that they had a stake in Czechoslovakia's continued existence. Who had a stake in Czechoslovakia's artificial existence? Let's put it that way. Who had a stake?
Well, I can tell you who had a stake in it. Yeah. As soon as they create a new nation, they can run right in and take over the government and everything else.
There you go. There you go.
All the trade routes, all the yes. stores, all the whatever it comes down to, it's all open game.
Yes.
Yeah. I'll bet you there were Jews flocking from Poland over into it.
Carpetbaggers. Right? He continues. This is actually very good, except for the comment about democracy. There was not a damn thing that Britain and France could have done for Czechoslovakia, given that they had no border with Czechoslovakia. The British Army was a small, token peacetime force with no modern planes until the first Spitfires and Hurricanes rolled off the assembly lines in 1939. The French talked tough, but they absolutely positively not going to do anything against Germany unless Britain took the lead and left a lot of skin in the game, or put a lot of soldiers on the field. The desire not to act on their own, let alone take the lead, permeated the French high command, the French political leadership, and most of all, French public opinion. All right, so this war against Germany was mobilized against public opinion in France, Britain, America, etc. Okay, folks?
You can't blame the fellow for saying what he says about democracy, because that was a worldwide brainwash.
That's right.
It was a worldwide brainwash to make people think, America is a democracy, and America is the greatest country in the world at the time, of course.
Yes.
And so everybody would want to be a democracy then. You see, it would be natural. Yes. But no one, you see, I didn't know that democracy wasn't for white people. I had no idea. And right. I didn't even know about the division it causes. And I didn't really know that President James Madison had said what he said.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They keep all that thing. That's why they don't teach you stuff like that in school. You don't think they were going to teach me that quote in school, did you?
Right. Mm-hmm. Oh, no. Absolutely
democracy
not.
Is the vilest form of government.
Yeah.
I mean, you know. Somebody was telling me that the Jews created democracy, but Plato is the one. If you read Plato's,
right, he was the utopia.
I think it's
utopia.
I think it was Plato's Democracy. I can't remember what it was. It's the same idea. You have to wonder if Plato was a Jew at this point, but I doubt it. But
no, he was just an idealist. He had a better idea.
It just so turns out, I mean, this is all glory to Yahweh that, you know, everything about this democracy is now understood why they want to spread it. It all makes sense. It all brings all the dots together when the Illuminati, so to speak, and, you know, they would tell you that the Illuminati wanted to get rid of the family. They wanted to get rid of all the monarchies. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
You wondered, why would the Illuminati want to get rid of the monarchies? You know what I mean?
Sure.
But, you know, when you were talking about this before with Pastor Steve, you know, even though you think it was a wicked thing that we did wanting our own king, it is, okay? Mm-hmm. But it actually saved us in many cases. That's why they want to get rid of monarchies, because it was actually something that saved us. Yeah. If we had gone right into democracy or something, and I probably wouldn't even be here now anyway. The world would have ended.
Yeah.
If you had a wicked king, the Jews could stand for that because they could work with him. But if you had a just king, like what was the king from Alfred, right?
Yes, Alfred the Great.
They were screwed with him. You know what I mean?
They had no chance. They had no chance in infiltrating his government. Right, and most of the governments are monarchies. Absolutely, especially the Tsar of Russia, right? They had to kill him to take over that country. So, we would have been much worse off if Europe had been a democracy for 2,000 years, been a bunch of monarchies.
The kings were a protection of sort.
Yes, they were.
Even though we asked Yahweh, we should have just kept Yahweh as king. That would have been the ultimate protection.
That's right.
But since we wanted an earthly king, we found out right away with Saul that it wasn't a good idea. Then we had his We had David, which was a good idea, but his son turned out to be an abomination. Right. Then we split up the tribes, and they're building the golden calf again. So that's it was right. bad in many respects, but it was a protection from the Jews in many respects, too, yes, in many ways. Yeah, and sure. it probably helped us for a long time. So that's why they figured out we got to get rid of this. These monarchs. I mean, right. of course, you knew the Tsar in Russia was the richest man in the world. Yeah. So they didn't just want the land of Russia or something like that or to kill. They wanted to spill blood, of course. Sure. But they wanted all that money, which they still owe to Russia today.
That's right. That's right. He says further, the revenge-seeking British and French had pushed the envelope when they compelled the Germans to sign the Treaty of Versailles. That is well stated. It's amazing how a Vietnamese person knows more about the Treaty of Versailles than the average Westerner. This is funny. However, the terms of the treaty had been so overly severe that it could not be enforced except by force of arms. Okay, so the Treaty of Versailles had to be kept in place by military means, which primarily was the French doing that because they were the neighbors of Germany, and as we found out, the Polish. Okay. It became politically unsustainable for Britain to enforce the treaty by force of arms when Germany rearmed and Hitler repudiated said treaty. Amen.
Happened in the Civil War? That was also enforced by arms.
Well, yeah.
right? Well, we went into martial law in the South.
Right. Yeah, that was
Reconstruction. It was enforced by arms.
Right. Reconstruction. Yeah. It was after 2 years of peace, after 2 years of the Civil War being over, then the radical abolitionists sent the military down there again. A total military occupation. Yeah. By their willingness.
One of the biggest. Go ahead.
Well, yeah. Finish your thought.
Yeah. I was just going to say one of the biggest scumbags that has ever lived on this planet is General Sherman.
Yeah, he marched through the South, wreaked havoc. What do you call it? The scorched earth policy, right? Yeah.
Well, yeah. I don't know. You could just call it. They killed everything that could be food for the people. They destroyed all the grain, or took what they could and destroyed everything. The animals, everything. It was like a pestilence war. This is like way out of the. This is how the Allies treated Germany.
Right.
And remember the South wore gray uniforms. I like to always, build this connection, is the South wore gray uniforms, and the Germans had gray uniforms.
right, Judah. okay.
Yeah, well, I believe the South should have won. And if the South had won, we would have not come this far. The Jews might have had a longer ride to go to get the time of Jacob's trouble in place.
Okay.
It's well, because the North won. That's my opinion, okay. But I believe that's many people's opinion. I heard today you said that the flag represents the white people in the South, but the flag represents the 13 tribes. Right. I understand there's 12, but there's 13 when you took out Levi, and right. it is the crossing there is the crossing of the arms of Jacob over Ephraim and Manasseh.
Yeah. Well, Jacob.
That's
is
what
the
that flag
star.
Stands for. That's why it's a racist flag, ladies and gentlemen, because it's a true Israelite flag, not a Jewish flag.
Right.
A true Israel. That's why it's racist.
Nothing Jewish about it. Right. Jacob is the middle star, and the 12 tribes are on the cross members.
Okay, you could put it that way, whichever way you want, but that's him crossing his arms.
Right.
And that same thing is within the British flag.
Yeah. I would not agree, though, that had the South won the war, they would have staved off the Jews. Judah P. Benjamin was actually the Rothschild agent that controlled the South. And so either way, it was a stalemate, and it caused the Rothschilds to back off for a number of years. And it took until 1913 before they could establish another national bank, right?
Well, you could be right, but, you did have Albert Pike there, too.
Yeah,
but, you could be right, but one never knows what might have played out. I mean, maybe, but I think the wrong side won the war.
Yeah.
And it's always that way, is it not? It's the North Korea that wins the war.
Yeah.
It's the North Vietnam who win. It's the communists. And that's what really took place, as far as I'm concerned. I know you think Lincoln was a decent president. I mean, I don't know about Lincoln. All I know is it's open to he could be related to A.A. Springs, who is a Jew.
Yeah, I've looked now, into that.
Whether that's
found
true
any.
Or not, I do not know.
I haven't found any documentation. The only document says some courthouse in some county in North Carolina.
Well, we talked about it before, but yeah, I mean, right. You know, the Civil War is something, you know, I know you're an expert in that, and I love to learn about those kinds of things, and, you know, we should do the same thing in the future with some of the Civil War things.
Sure.
Because there's a lot to uncover here. You know, I know we're talking about Germany, but we're still talking about Germany. We're still talking
That's
about
right.
the tribe of Judah.
Oh, yeah.
Regardless, we're talking about the – this is just a shade
of
what happened in Germany – what's happened in the World War II. This is shades of these things.
Yeah. Again, it's just another war arranged by the Rothschilds in which we Israelites die. Right?
The prime men of America, the prime men of America, probably, I mean, isn't that, didn't the most people that died in a war, it was the Civil War?
Yeah.
And how good was that for the Jews?
Exactly. Yeah.
How good was that?
Exactly.
That the prime stock of American men and their boys, some of them, died in that war.
But
and General Sherman is, it's just unbelievable the crime that was committed there. You know, what's funny is I don't think he's a Jew.
Well,
he
no,
was trained by Jews.
He
but
was?
It's funny that his name was Sherman because that's a Jew-type name.
A lot of Jews have that name, But it's incredible that this Vietnamese guy has better insights into the Treaty of Versailles than most Western historians. I mean, it's really hilarious. But he does. He's telling the truth here. Okay. And he says it was because the Versailles Treaty was an overly severe treaty that it had to be imposed by force of arms through the entirety of its existence. So how are the German people supposed to respond to being militarily occupied, right? And for all these years? Well, Hitler would have arisen no matter what.
They gave him 3 weeks to decide, just reminding you from last week. They gave him 3 weeks to decide whether or not to sign that treaty.
Yeah,
Germany.
Right. Yeah.
And that's not long enough.
And it wasn't even Germans who were doing the side. It was Bolsheviks who had temporarily taken control by a coup. All right? So the German people were not represented at the Treaty of Versailles at all. At all. That's the reality.
And the
folks.
American people are not represented by the democracy that's in place in our country, or maybe now we might be, but we haven't been in over 100 years at least.
Oh, for sure. All right. The British did not have the means, diplomatic, economic, and military, to restrain Germany, so they hoped, perhaps against hope, that Germany would instead restrain herself. That British hope died a cruel death. Well, I think we showed very conclusively that it was Churchill. Churchill was the guy who was pushing for war. And, the British made a separate deal with Soviet Russia. Of course, the Germans and the Russians invaded Poland at the same time from opposite sides. But the British had made promises to to Poland, that the British would come to the aid of Poland should war ensue with Germany. And the British totally reneged on that promise. Instead, they allowed the Soviet Union to take over Poland completely.
Well, what does that tell you about the UK?
Yeah, it's amazing. So it would be nice for a true, a balanced history to be taught somewhere. But it's not.
Well, it comes down to what I talked about last week: is this penchants? They have a pen. They want to, for some reason, the UK wants to persecute the tribe of Judah, and I mean even the white men that are Freemasons. They want to persecute the tribe of Judah. They did it in Ireland, didn't they?
Mm-hmm. Oh,
right,
man.
Didn't they? You know, there were four Bloody Sundays in Ireland. I had found out when I was looking up about Bloody Sunday that happened in Poland, and there were four. You know, when you hear the group U2 singing Bloody Sunday, Sunday Bloody Sunday, there were four Bloody Sundays, and they all had to do with the English you know, doing right. some violence over there. So the English just have this penchant. Doesn't matter if it's just the Jews. You can't just blame it on the Jews. The English people have something. They are against the tribe of Judah because they have persecuted Ireland heavily. They're did this to Germany. They did what they've done to America as well. Tried to do it to us, but Yahweh intervened really there. And then the Boers, as you see.
Right. Right.
With the Afrikaners, right. You know what I mean? So they have this, we talked about it last week, they have this special thing where they want to persecute, not just the Jews,
right.
The English people want to persecute the tribe of Judah.
Yeah, well, it's certainly
I don't understand it.
Yeah, well, because the Jews have been in control of England since 1695 when they created the Bank of England, right? And so it's Jewish policy that has ruled in England since 1700 easily, okay? And so whenever another country gets in their way, such as Ireland or Germany, and of course they happen to be Zarah Judah, the Irish are Zarah Judah. So, but that potato famine was not a famine at all. It was a deliberately contrived death by starvation by the British government against the Irish.
And where do we see that again?
Yeah,
we saw right. that in the Bolshevik Revolution, where they gave people one potato per family per week.
Yeah, right.
Well, that's crazy because what they would do is they would go down the streets every day with carts and knock on the doors and say, "You have any dead?"
Right. Yeah.
Well, that's if you look into that, ladies and gentlemen, you're going to be in for a real shock.
Yes. Yeah, death by starvation. That's how the Bolsheviks operated, and that's how the British Empire operated against the Irish during the potato famine. It was deliberately caused. It was not an accident, folks. It was deliberately caused by the British government under the auspices of the perfidious Jew.
Now, think about that, Eli, right? Mm-hmm. The Germans obeyed the whatever it is, I can't think of the name of it, the Geneva Convention.
Right.
How to treat prisoners, okay? One of the things you don't do is you don't starve the prisoners.
Right.
So we see that even the Jews, when they're by themselves, disobey what would be the Geneva Convention.
Yes. Yes.
See, you don't starve people to death like that. That's going over the line. That's going over General Sherman's line.
Right. Well, and Germans were being starved to death by the Allies even after the Versailles Treaty.
Well, right? That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
they didn't obey because they were under Jew control. They didn't obey the Geneva Convention, how to treat prisoners.
Yes.
But the Germans did obey it. So who really is the evil?
Yeah.
Who really are the evil Axis? Who really are they?
Yes, yes. So you cannot blame Adolf Hitler. You cannot blame the German people for World War II. It was the brutal enforcement of a totally illegal treaty, namely the Versailles Treaty, which we found out the main reason for it was for the Jews to create their precious one world government. Right? That was the real intention of the Versailles Treaty, leading to the League to Enforce Peace. Right?
Well, how does that work, Eli? It works like this. When you have a war, when the war is over, first, you make money on selling the munitions on both sides of the thing, and you make money off selling the weapons for the war. Then, after the war, you get making money on both sides on rebuilding everything again. But the key is now you can change the culture. Now you can change the laws. Now you can change everything. So, therefore, by having this world war in Europe and including America, what did they change in America? The New Deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
See, even when you win the war, you can change the laws. What happened in 9/11? Well, we had some towers hit. Now all of a sudden, we have the Patriot Act and everything else under the sun. You know what I'm saying? These wars are a reason to change things that didn't need to be changed. This is forced change.
Exactly.
Just like this guy is talking about in the article you're talking about.
Yeah.
It's forced change by the Jews are the ones. Now, who goes into the airports and checks everybody out? Jewish companies for the TSA,
right? That's right. Exactly.
And they let the rabbis go through, right?
Right. With all their yes. drugs and paraphernalia, right?
And their drugs and their
smut
and kiddie porn and their,
right? There you
and
go.
Probably the blood that they're bringing through
right.
and the
right.
children's yeah. body parts and the organs that they've stolen off of people,
right?
Et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Yeah, and money.
Think
cash.
About that, because that's what the purpose of World War is.
Yeah.
If you just think about what I just told you, you talk about making money off both sides of the war. It doesn't end
yeah.
there.
Right.
It ends at, by changing everything. You can yeah. now you can get right in the government.
Yeah. But I think, David, we've proven beyond any shadow of a doubt that Hitler had no intention of ruling the world. That's just pure Jew propaganda. Hitler was trying to undo the evils of the Versailles Treaty. Period.
Again, Eli, again, the Jews calling somebody else what they do.
That's right.
They're the ones that want the New World Order.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They
right.
want to run the world. They want a world of their own, do they not?
Right, right.
So and, they say they're calling yeah. somebody else what they are.
Right.
This is the technique. I
Absolutely.
Keep telling you the patterns, not you, but I, the
yeah,
people,
I
the patterns of the enemy. And one of the patterns of the enemy is to call somebody else to, what they are.
To accuse us of what they do, right.
Yes.
Germany must perish.
And whoever calls it first
okay.
it
yeah.
wins. Like they called us anti-Semites, right?
Right.
Well, I told you anti-Semite means anti-white. They're the ones that are really anti-Semites.
Yes.
But they called it to us first. That's what
right.
I'm trying to say.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Now, we had been discussing or were prepared to discuss this article at Tomato Bubble about Germany invading Belgium, et cetera, but I wanted to give a little more historical background to that. First, the Sudetenland in Czechoslovakia, which was, we just found out, was a country created by the Versailles Treaty, putting together four ethnic groups that never in their lifetime would have ever thought of living together under one nation, under one flag, but this is what the Versailles Treaty created. Instant Balkanization, okay.
Wouldn't that cause, or would that cause instant miscegenation?
Right, that too. I'm sure that's what they were after. Yeah, to break down national barriers, so to destroy the nationalities of the European people. Okay,
isn't it funny how they divide?
Right.
There's somebody that divides people,
to divide,
but they're also
unify.
Somebody that forces things together somehow.
Right? Exactly.
They can use both techniques, right?
Yeah, sure.
They're forcing all of us to live with people we don't want to live with.
There you go.
You know,
right.
why does white flight happen? White flight happens because we don't want to live with blacks.
That's right.
It doesn't mean
or,
we hated the
Muslims.
Blacks. It just means we don't want to live with
yeah,
them. That's why white flight happens.
Their standards of living are not up to ours. They never can be, right? They simply can't. They can't do it. That's why we have white flight. But white flight is going to turn into white fight, folks, very soon.
Yeah, it's
going to
have to.
Yeah, yeah. And your report on these German biker gangs punishing Muslim men, That's going to increase, folks. White flight is going to turn into white fight. That's what's going to happen. All right. Now, but before we get to that article, there's a website called Quora. And under about a quarter of the way down, Knut Ritter states, Austria was not invaded by Germany in World War II. That is a funny legend in order to get rid of the responsibility during World War II. Now, but it's also a false lie told about Hitler. He did not invade Austria. He simply gave them the opportunity to join Germany, and they did.
Gladly, okay? They did.
Yeah, gladly they did, right? Because a lot of Austrian territory was taken away from Austria by the Versailles Treaty as well. See, only the German people suffered as a result of the Versailles Treaty. Everybody else gained. But the big gainer was the Jew. The international Jew, especially, was the big gainer of the Versailles Treaty. And by the way, they didn't have any country then. They still didn't have any country during World War II. And the country they have now, which they think they have, still hasn't been secured by them. Right, which proves that they are not Israel, but they are the children of Cain, condemned to be wanderers and vagabonds, which they have been throughout history. Okay, he continues. Germany in 1938 to form the Greater Germany. In other words, Austria voluntarily joined Germany. In fact, the formation of resulting Greater Germany had been a dream for almost a century, and there had been slight resistance in the beginning only. Later, Austrians were quite happy about being a part of Germany, and several Austrians made an impressive Nazi career. Although Austrians had just a minor percentage of the total German population, the amount of them in the SS was higher. Well, good for them. I think the Austrians understood what was going on. Belarus and Ukraine did not exist at that time. They were part of the Soviet Union. Sudetenland, part of Czechoslovakia, was annexed before the start of World War II, which by Germany, same as the rest of the country in the beginning of 1939. Albania belonged to Italy before the start of World War II. Hungary, Italy, Romania, Bulgaria, and Finland were German allies, called the Axis powers. When the war tide changed, or toward the end of the war, of course, all of them switched sides, and most of them were then occupied. Okay? So Hitler did not invade all of these countries, as is falsely claimed by historians. These last-named countries were allies of Germany. Okay? And they wanted to see the Jew expelled. Hitler's troops, the German troops, were welcomed with open arms by these Eastern European republics.
And by Russian women, too.
That's right.
They brought them flowers and everything else. The Germans that went into Russia had actually built the churches back up. They had the Jews had destroyed all the churches up there. And I believe they turned them into things like Freemasonic lodges and all kinds of different things. Yeah. And Hitler, the Germans straightened a lot of that out on their way through. You know, they took some time to help the people as they went through. That's very evil, you know.
That's right.
That's very people. Evil to actually, rebuild a church or something. That's not good. That's something only the evil would do, according to our world, that is.
Sure. Helping people that have been persecuted by Jews, Freemasons, and communists is evil. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So this website is 11 countries invaded by Nazi Germany and why they were invaded. Unfortunately, it picks up with country number 6. I don't know what happened to the first 5. Some error here. I couldn't find the first 5, but I think we've discussed some of them already. Okay. And number 6, Belgium. And here it has a photograph of German troops occupying Eupen-Malmedy, a German border region annexed by Belgium in the Treaty of Versailles, 1919. Okay, so
would you mind stopping for a moment?
Go ahead. Yeah.
I'll show you where page 1 is. Hold on a second. I got it.
Oh, okay.
Let me just shoot it to you. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I mean, we might as well start off at the top with this, because this is very important.
Yes.
I like that that other Korean article you have, too. There's a lot to that article.
Yes, the Vietnamese guy. Yeah.
there's a lot to that article.
Hey, spot on, I mean, except for democracy. Right?
All right, here comes your it starts off there.
Oh, okay. All right, so I don't know why my copy didn't have this. All right.
Because yours said number 2 at the very end, so I went to the end of the HTML. It was /1. So you want to go to – if you're on this one right now, you can just go to the end of the thing and just put 2 and then hit enter, and we'll go to the second one where we were.
Well, I've got it now. So Czechoslovakia, which we had already discussed in detail. But let's see what they have to say here. The occupation of the Sudetenland, the border regions in the north and west of Czechoslovakia, was the first time Hitler flexed his military muscles in Europe. The region was conceded to Germany by the Czech government in an attempt to avoid war after the Germans made demands for it to be handed over. Okay, so that was peacefully taken. It never should have been taken from Germany in the first place. Okay, two wrongs. You know, you might want to say two wrongs don't make a right. However, who did the first wrong? Right?
I just thought of something, too.
Yeah.
You see, doing the Versailles Treaty, this is something you have to realize here. I don't mean you personally, but I want you to think about this, is that they knew how strong Germany was. Yes. And Germany had proved that in World War I. Even though they pretended that they lost the war,
right.
the rest of the people pretended that Germany lost. They knew Germany didn't lose, and they saw how right. strong Germany was.
Right. Okay.
And so they decided, by doing the Treaty of Versailles, they decided to divide Germany up and weaken it.
Right,
so that
exactly.
when they knew damn right well that they were going to start World War II and they were going to prod them into it. So they wanted to weaken them up a bit.
Sure.
Too. That's another reason for it.
Right.
So
absolutely.
They thought like if they weakened them up, just imagine if they couldn't have weakened them up. They probably would have rolled over the whole continent.
Sure. Right. Right.
You know, I mean, you got to think about that. That's a strategy of war without even being at war. The Versailles Treaty right
yes,
there.
Exactly.
The division.
Well, now, as you were speaking, I just had a great insight. Your comments triggered the fact. Now, remember, because last time we talked about the fact that Hitler's Germany was the only country that managed to get out of the Depression on its own. Okay. While the rest of the world was still in the midst of the Great Depression. So, well, the Jews caused this worldwide depression. So it's their own damn fault that Hitler came to power by causing this depression.
Well, they do these things deliberately. They're not as smart as
I don't know if this is deliberate.
They're cunning in many ways, but they're not as smart as they think they are.
Right, right.
So, yeah, they were cunning in many ways, but not in all ways.
Well, I don't think they could have imagined that Hitler would employ Lincoln's government-issued money. they never in their wildest dreams would have thought he would do that. Okay,
and yet, what's funny is they couldn't pull off what they've done with the other two that have done that, or other three or whatever it is. They couldn't kill him. He's standing up in his nation in the middle of a car. He could have been blown away at any moment.
Yes,
they couldn't do it to him because Germany was united.
Right.
They couldn't even pay somebody in Germany to kill him.
Yeah, yeah. It would have been tough.
That's how great the you know what I'm talking about triumph of the will is. That's the example of unity that is the most wild example of unity that there has ever been. That's why it still affects the world today. That's why everybody wants to read Mein Kampf. That's why everybody's interested in Hitler still today.
Yes. So the primary evil in the world in the days of World War I, World War II, and the Weimar Republic, et cetera, was Jewish banking, Jewish usury. That's the primary evil. And what Hitler did was he focused, he showed the world that you can have a prosperous country without Jewish banksters running the show. Okay? And
may that's I say why, one more thing?
Yeah. Go ahead.
People are asking, how do we get the Jews out of our country?
Right.
Well, Hitler showed you how.
Yeah, destroy
you
their bank.
All you have to do is outlaw usury.
Yes.
Not all Jews will leave then, but most of them will leave.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's how they make their living.
Most of them will leave, Chase Manhattan. There's
no good for them that does not have usury.
Yeah, Goldman Sachs, Chase Manhattan, Bank of America, you name it. All these big banks are owned by Jews. All these big trading companies are owned by Jews. So, you know, if you forbade stocks and bonds, we don't need stocks and bonds to run the country. That's actually a drain on the economy. That's nothing but a shell game. The people don't benefit from that. Only certain corporations that, and typically when the individual investor gets involved in the stock market, it's only a question of time before he loses his shirt, right? Which is what happened in 1929.
I know you can answer this question. When was the last time usury was instituted? I know when. You know when, right? I don't know if I know the year, but we know who used to institute that usury would not be able to be done.
Well,
the Catholic Church.
Right, right. Yeah, that was a while
ago. I forget what the year was, but I would have thought you might know what the year was. But usury has been going, I remember Calvin, okay?
Right.
Coughlin, a Jew, he said a little usury was good. So you knew he was a Jew, right?
A little poison
so it was still
good.
Going at his time.
Right. Well, see,
so
the Catholic Church,
Martin Luther had put the thing on the door, right? And then the divisions began to come, and still usury wasn't kind of going there, but now Calvin was trying to bring it in with the gradualism, you see?
That's right.
Just a little usury is good. Like a little white lie is okay.
Right.
Just don't do full-blown lies.
A little Judaism is okay.
Yeah.
And then Cromwell brought the Jews in full hog, right? The Dutch Jews.
There you go. So, in other words, anytime usury, you see how the Jews weren't there? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So anytime usury is outlawed, if we just wanted to make our country survive, it would be just that simple.
That's
right. You know, because the federal debt itself, okay, it's a lie.
Yeah, it can be easily repudiated.
And you could take that to court and you could have that thrown out because it is a scheme, a scam,
right.
And it is illegal.
Right. Not to go off on this tangent, but if the federal government simply repudiated the debt, it would not affect the relationships between you and I and our checkbooks and our deposits and our accounts at all. It's all that would happen is that we no longer would owe any debt to the Federal Reserve Bank or to the World Bank and all the other parasitic entities that are stealing our money, right?
And the simple way that could be done is by instituting Yahweh's 50-year jubilee.
There you go.
Or every 7 years or whatever it is.
Right.
In other words, you see how Yahweh protected us with his law against the Jews.
Right.
With that forgiving every seventh year or the jubilee on the 50th year. You know, basically, what happened to that? Where is it? They talk about it. The Pope said the jubilee just happened last year.
Right.
And he was forgiving abortionists.
Right, exactly.
I mean, I shouldn't laugh. It's just so insane.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy evil. That's what it is, right? So the author continues here. For Hitler, this fulfilled two aims, namely occupation of German Czechoslovakia. It was really Germany. The Jews had no right to give it to, create a new nation and give it to that new nation. They had no right to do that. For Hitler, this fulfilled two aims. One was to unite the German-speaking people of this region with Germany, which is perfectly a legitimate goal, supporting his goal of a larger united German nation. The other was that it let him test how far he could push other European powers who backed down rather than defend Czechoslovakia from German threats. Well, it wasn't a German threat. The evil was already done. The evil against the German people was done by creating this false state called Czechoslovakia, which never had any right to exist.
So, he's undoing an evil is what he's doing.
Exactly.
And to the Jew, that is an evil.
That's right. And the reason why he was able to do it was because the Jews had created a global depression. It was their own damn fault. Right? If they hadn't gotten so damn greedy by creating this global depression, Hitler may have never even come about. Okay? But the fact that this gave Hitler the opportunity to turn the German economy around, which was the worst of all of them, he turned
around. Well, they had their first democracy, which caused that.
That's right.
I want to remind you this. This is how crazy it is, ladies and gentlemen. The first German democracy is called the Weimar Republic.
Right.
I mean, right. come on. And
right.
what it did for them was it brought all kinds of debauchery and it ended up giving all the businesses and everything away to the Jews, and the Germans were eating out of garbage cans. That's what democracy will do for white people, ladies
That's
and
right.
gentlemen. That's what I'm trying to tell you. I'm telling you that democracy is not for white people. They were eating out of garbage cans while the Jews were mocking them, as I told you before.
Exactly.
You have to realize that's what democracy does. Mm-hmm. That's the first democracy in Germany. And the first democracy in Germany was an abject failure. Not a failure for the Jews, understand.
No, absolutely
a failure
not.
For the white people of Germany.
Amen. Amen. So Austria, like the occupation of the Sudetenland, that of Austria was part of a drive towards a great Germany. And a part of Hitler's drive to undo the wrongs of the Versailles Treaty. Okay? All of this must be perceived as undoing the evils, and these are real, blatant, obvious evils that were done by the Jewish Versailles Treaty, folks. Germany was being published for a war it did not start, and for which it was forced to take the entire burden of guilt and reparations, even though it was Britain that really started the war. The British Jews were the ones behind World War I. There's no doubt about that, folks. Absolutely no doubt. Austria had been part of the German Confederation until Prussia pushed it out in the Austro-Prussian War of 1866, ensuring that Prussia led German unification 5 years later. Okay. Well, there had been an attempt to include Austria in a larger Germany in 1918, though other countries blocked this. Now, what under countries would want to block this, right?
England.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, America.
Under the Jews, yeah. Well, America, not
comment.
So much.
Let me make this little comment about if you know you've read Mein Kampf, then you know Hitler was disgusted what he saw in Austria when he was growing up as a young lad.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He was viewing things that, you know, made him realize that it wasn't a unified nation, made him realize that it wasn't the way it was supposed to be. He could tell that Austria was, he talks about it. If you ever want to read about it, read Mein Kampf.
Yeah, it was full of
Jewish perversions.
He talks
about it and you can see what his, you know, what his full blown thoughts are on Austria.
Right.
So he was rescuing his childhood. I believe he lived in Austria, right? He grew up in Austria.
Right.
So he was rescuing his own homeland.
Well, he saw the Jewish perversions, in Vienna. He could see that with his own eyes. So he developed his anti-Jewish attitudes very early in life, because what the Jews did to Weimar Germany was already happening in Austria. Okay, he had firsthand knowledge of all that. Okay, so Hitler was motivated to destroy Jewish influence in the West. That's what his motivation was. And Mein Kampf is proof of it, okay? I've only read sections of it, but that's what it's about, okay? So now we talked extensively about Poland and why Hitler had to invade Poland, because the Polish government, at the instigation of Britain and Jews, was genociding the German people in the Danzig Corridor. And Hitler could not stand by and allow his people to be executed, genocided by this combine of Jews, Poles, and Brits. He could not allow that. He had to do something. And again,
well, if he cared about the people in Germany, his own people, and cared enough to do this for them,
yes,
of course he's going to care for the rest of the German people.
Yeah,
that would be hypocritical if he didn't. That would be very Jewish if he didn't.
But here, what they say is so lame. Having brought most Germans together, Hitler wanted more space for them to live in. Lebensraum, meaning living space, was his idea that the German people had a right to a greater territory, namely the territory that was stolen from them by the Versailles Treaty. They don't mention that, okay? And they don't mention the genocide that was occurring to the Danzig Germans. Nothing about that. All right. Nothing about the French occupying the Ruhr and disabling German industry. What are the German people supposed to do for work?
Well, they don't care about that.
Yeah,
they don't care about us working. They want us on the welfare dole. What they want us to do is eat out of garbage cans. If you're looking at that same picture as I am, there's something there I would like to tell you about real quickly. Is cavalry, even in today's war, horses still would be needed.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I just want to mention to you, in case any of you out there have heard about it,
right,
when Obama was at the end of his administration, he wanted to kill all the wild horses in America.
Really? Wow.
Oh,
I hadn't heard that.
I don't know if it's all wild horses, but there was this big thing about him having wild horses killed.
Yeah, he wanted them to be communists.
Now, that right away made me realize that the militias would use
horses. I gotcha. Right.
You understand my thinking there?
Yep,
and that's why I wanted to mention that, because I see the horse there, and
right,
the Germans, even in World War II, used
horses,
cavalry.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, these are infantry. Obviously, the horses were pulling wagons that had supplies on them, right?
So look way up there. There's people sitting on
horses. There's cavalrymen. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
In other words, there's some places that vehicles still can't go that horses can.
Right, exactly.
And that's the point of it. And that's, I really believe that Obama wanted to make sure, I hate to even mention that thing's name. I mean, right? I really do, but you know, he wanted to kill the wild horses. Look into it, ladies and gentlemen, and we can find out about it. And I know it's, you know, but I just want you to realize that they wanted to make sure if we wanted to go against them, that we didn't have the horses.
Yeah. At the same time, Obama and Eric Holder were giving military supplies to Mexican drug lords.
Yes. Automatic weapons, by the way.
Yeah. Automatic. Yeah. This is
while they want to take them away from, while they want to take handguns away from you, they're handing them automatic weapons.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, is this stupidity or treason? Okay, okay, folks.
This guy's alive. How this guy is alive is just beyond me. Really? I guess Eric Holder just came out and admitted something about Obama too. I really try to stay away from these guys because I'd like to strangle them myself. But if if it was
that'd
legal,
be news.
I'd tar and feather them first.
Yeah, but, right. There you go. There you go.
You know, he just came out and admitted that Obama was treasonous to America.
So
something
they,
towards that. I'm paraphrasing.
So this article attributes the occupation of Poland to Lebensraum, says nothing about the genocide of German people that was going on in the Danzig Quarter. Folks, this is your mainstream history. Nevertheless, it's fairly even-handed compared to most of what you hear about Hitler and the Germans, you know, between World War I and World War II. Denmark. Five Danish soldiers with a 37-millimeter anti-tank gun outside Hertug Hansgades Hospital in Haderslev on the morning of April 9, 1940. Okay, so this is now we saw in number six in Belgium, we saw that the Germans were welcomed to this border town in Belgium, which was another area taken away from Germany by the Versailles Treaty. Okay. And it says, southern Denmark contained some German-speaking people, and there were Nazis who hoped to occupy it in time. But the reason for its invasion in 1940 was a strategic one. Norway was an important territory for the Nazis to occupy, strategically rather than ideologically. Northern Jutland, where's that name come from, David?
Tribe of Jutah.
Jutah, there you go, the tribe of Jutah. And not Jews, folks, but the literal Judahites of the 12 tribes, where they originally settled their western trek before they crossed over into Britain as Hengist and Horsa, who were the leaders of the Jutes that went to Great Britain. Okay, unfortunately, our people have been making war or fighting each other, not making war, but fighting each other for generations. Mostly, especially in the modern era, in wars instigated by Jews, in which we Israelites kill each other. Okay.
Hey, let's stop for a second.
Yeah.
When
stop
the
killing?
Tribes were together and knew who they were, they used to camp together.
Right.
And they never fought each other.
Right.
Because there wasn't any Jew in them.
Right.
You see what
there
I mean?
You go.
They would camp and they would have three on each side, the way it's going to be in the
Jerusalem.
New Jerusalem with the four sides of the cube, the temple, you know. Basically, we didn't fight each other. It was once the tribes became didn't know who they were, got separated. Division.
Right.
They got weakened, and then they got turned against each other. Now, this Norway thing, I saw there's a three-part series on this you can see on YouTube. And, yes, it was strategic. And, yes, England was late on the ball. Hitler was so far ahead of them in every way that there could be. They were on their way over, and they sent special forces over to try to take over Norway, but they were too late.
Right. I don't know if we'll have
Germans,
time.
The Germans were ahead of them, and they had to fight in Norway. And I'll tell you what, the people, the Norwegian people gave them a good fight out in the country.
Right.
And there was a lot of deaths that happened during that thing. And see, these are our own brothers killing each other because they believed the brainwash of the Jewish press worldwide.
Right. Exactly.
They believed that they were fighting the German, evil, evil, evil Germans.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And that's
right.
Really what was going on. And they really believed that the Germans were evil. I saw a whole thing about this, and it's pretty, you should see it. It really is remarkable.
Well, this report, even though it is anti-German, it's more even-handed than most of the World War II history books, because it's they're not saying that Germany wanted to rule the world. It invaded southern Denmark and Norway for convenience. Well, because they were expecting to be a British invasion, right? So since the war had begun in full bloom, now it's time for Germany to defend itself, get ready to, you know, repel a British invasion. Okay? France, I don't
forget
think...
all the exact reasons, but there were reasons, strategic reasons, like supply lines.
Sure.
I believe, can't remember where the supply line was, but the English wanted it, and the Germans beat them to it, and they were kind of ticked off about it.
Right.
But there's more reasons than just supply lines. It's like it's like having Japan, having American military forces in Japan, right? We can bomb China from there.
Yes.
You know what I mean? There's reasons. And so Hitler wanted to take certain areas. It wasn't that he was trying to take the whole world. He was trying to take the strategic areas
away from
so
the
that,
British.
You know, they could keep their supplies going so that they could keep the other, you know, people from getting that land and fighting against them with it. You know what I mean? And keeping them from going through certain waters, etc.
Exactly. Well, the British were planning on using certain ports in Norway and other countries to deliver their supplies, right? Well, if the Nazis cut those off ahead of time, the British couldn't do it. I mean, it's a beautiful military strategy, right? We really need to talk about Dunkirk. We won't have time today. But to put the lie to the claim that Hitler wanted to rule the world, he never would have let the British soldiers go at Dunkirk. No way. He never would have done that if he was truly that evil genius that everybody says he is, right? Or the Jews claim he is, right? So anyway, five, Norway, the heavy cruiser Admiral Hipper landing troops in Norway in 1940. On some level, economic reasons underlie many wars. In the case of the German invasion of Norway, these reasons were of the utmost importance. Norway had ice-free ports with access to the North Atlantic, with its trade routes vital to Europe. It also provided access to the mines of mineral-rich Sweden to the south and east. Both trade and minerals would be vital to winning the war. Okay? So they're being even-handed by not claiming that Germany was, that Hitler was trying to rule the world. Right? These are just strategic decisions that Hitler had to make because their war was, you know, once the British and French had declared war upon Germany, all bets were off. And Germany had to be the aggressor. That was the only way that Germany had any chance of winning a war, by being the aggressor, okay?
And you could probably, you know, to access those North Atlantic waters, strategically, the subs probably could have been launched in those waters, you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
And a lot of things could have been done, but it just didn't happen that way, that's all.
Yes, and here's a very important point. The Norwegian government had long struggled to remain neutral, though it leaned more towards Britain than Germany. The British and French had laid plans to invade it before the Germans could.
That's what I just said. Yes.
Oh, okay. All right.
But that's okay. That's okay. Yeah, it's nice to be confirmed.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So who was the real evil one? The ones who planned to invade first and Hitler got to beat them to the punch, right? But you don't hear about this. You don't hear
Hitler's
about this.
The evil one for beating him to the punch.
That's right.
I mean, they wanted to do the same thing, but if they did it, it wasn't evil because they weren't the axis of evil. See?
Which is what Hitler did to Stalin. Hitler knew, Hitler found out about Stalin's plan to invade Germany ultimately. And so at that point, he knew he had to strike first. Right? So again, Hitler is, this is, now we're talking about war strategy, nothing, which has nothing to do with any plans by Hitler or Germany to rule the world. Absolutely nothing, folks. Absolutely nothing. Number six, Belgium. Since the First World War, France had built a line of tough concrete defenses along its border with Germany, the Maginot Line. Attacking these head-on would have cost Hitler dearly and slowed down the fast-moving blitzkrieg attacks that were Germany's specialty. However, France had not extended the Maginot Line along the Belgian border for fear of offending her neighbors, so Hitler invaded Belgium in order to outflank the French defenses and allow a swift invasion of France. Okay, and here the photograph of Belgian citizens, as we mentioned earlier, Eupen-Malmedy, a German border region annexed by Belgium in the Treaty of Versailles, which Belgium had no right to take from Germany, but they accepted it by the Jews of the Versailles Treaty. And these people and the Germans were welcomed by these people when they came. They're
see,
drinking
the Germans
beer.
Were very happy people. You see them yes, smiling right, right here? When right, you yeah. saw Germans, like, you know, during the pictures of the war, except for post-war, they were very jolly people.
Right. They're invading with beer mugs.
Hey, yeah, right. But you know something that's funny
hey,
about
we
this
should
is
try that.
This is where it was said that they cut off the children. Remember,
right?
I'm just reiterating.
Supposedly cut off the hands of the
children,
so
that they
could
cut off all the children's hands, so they couldn't grow up to become soldiers.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that Jewish lie.
What a lie!
That Jewish British lie. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I hope people listening to this series, especially to this show, are getting a proper perspective on World War II. We talked about in previous shows the total justification Germany had for undoing that evil Versailles Treaty. Okay? But now once war has started, now we're talking about strategy and tactics. And here we see that the British would have invaded Norway had the Germans not got there first. So again, but Hitler's the evil one, okay? The British are never the evil ones.
No.
Churchill and Roosevelt are never the evil ones.
About wisdom.
Yeah.
Something I'd like to mention about wisdom in warfare. Just take a look at the German helmet. And then I want you to think about the American helmet. The American helmet doesn't have that extra thing coming down.
Flap,
it just
yeah.
goes across, right?
Right. Yeah,
what
exactly.
does that thing protect?
The ears.
It protects your ears. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That shows you that they got some brains, you
That's
see.
That's right.
All right? That's In right. other words, you know, that helmet was much, mm-hmm. even bikers love those helmets because they're more protective
That's
than
right.
any other helmet you
oh,
can
Oh, I thought
come
those guys
with.
Were Nazis.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, they will be now.
It will be. They're turning into Nazis as we speak, folks, because people are getting wise to the Jew. Right? Yeah.
But you see the wisdom in that helmet, right? I mean, mm-hmm. that just shows you right the smarts of the German people.
That's right. That's right.
You know what I mean? When you look at the American helmets, it just sits on your head. Your ears are wide open.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a bad design. No, in fact, many military historians have said that the German helmet was the best design of them all. It was the best design helmet for that reason. Okay, right. All right, Netherlands. Invading Belgium involved violating Dutch territory by going through the area known as the Maastricht Appendix. Hermann Göring, the head of the Luftwaffe, feared that the Dutch might respond by allowing the British to use their air bases to launch attacks against the Germans. Here again, it was a strategic move because the British probably would have used these air bases to attack Germany. And so the Netherlands, like Belgium and Denmark, found itself invaded for reasons of strategic convenience. Okay? Not because Hitler wanted to rule the world. And this is not a pro-German site, folks. This is simply telling it like it is, okay? France. Hostility between France and Germany went back over a century to the time of Napoleon. It was through a war with France in 1870 that, to 1871, that Germany was united, okay? The German people had to unite against France because France, under Napoleon, was attacking Germany, okay? So those evil Germans, right? Those evil Germans had to defend themselves against France. They should have just dropped down their arms and let themselves be killed. And France was among the Allied powers that had beaten Germany in the First World War. Revenge for that war was a huge part of Hitler's agenda, making war between the two countries almost inevitable. Well, France was the aggressor against Germany in World War I during the Weimar Republic, and would have been a major aggressor if they had kept up their own armaments, but they needed Britain's absolute support. So France was not willing to do that, okay? And I think the invasion of France was relatively mild. It was an easy overthrow. Okay. So revenge for that war was a huge part of Hitler's agenda, no doubt, making war between the two countries almost inevitable. France's military alliance with Poland, signed in 1921, brought the French into the war and gave Hitler the excuse he needed. Okay, well, yeah, right? That's not an excuse, folks. Hey, France and Poland are allying against us. Did Hitler cause that? You know, it's... All right, Britain, the Channel Islands. Some people say the Channel Islands are part of Britain. Others say it's not. Other people say they're an independent place. But they occupied the Channel Islands because for strategic value. All right. Soviet Union. Go ahead. You had something to say.
But see the soldiers? You see the soldiers there? They're smiling again.
Right. Yeah.
Happy people.
Yeah.
No, I mean, you know, they just are happy people. You're a German. You're always laughing. I'm happy-go-lucky.
Right, right.
That's just the way of the tribe of Judah, I guess. You know, we just seem to be happy, you know?
Soldatenheim, it says. There's an arrow, Soldatenheim of the Red Cross, meaning that there's a facility for soldiers if you need medical attention. All right, number 10, the Soviet Union. General Guderian at a forward command post of a Panzer regiment near Kiev, 1941. At the start of the Second World War, Germany and the Soviet Union were allies, but this was never going to last. The Nazis were ideologically opposed to the communist ideas under which the Soviet Union was run. But no, the Jews never opposed that, right? Nor did Britain or America under Churchill and Roosevelt. Okay, they were pro-communist to the hilt. As in much of Europe, there were many people in Germany who feared communism. Let me repeat this, folks. As in much of Europe, I would say as in all of Europe, except those areas controlled by Jews, there were many people in Germany who feared communism. And Hitler had added fuel to this fear, using it to support his rise to power. No, he didn't need to add fuel to that
That's
fire.
That's a bunch of crap.
Yeah, it is. All right. Okay. The fears of communism were real, folks. Just look at what was going on in the Soviet Union.
He was juxtaposed to it. In other words, what the Third Reich wanted to do was to decimate communism
Amen.
In the world.
That's
and
right.
They wanted to destroy it in Russia. I already told the people, I've told you before, that they planned on going in England after, and just they knew who all the Freemasons were and where all the lodges were, and
right.
they were going to destroy those lodges and take those people to trial.
Right. Right.
Okay, they wanted to destroy communism.
Yeah.
They were not pro-communist whatsoever. The reason for the treaty probably was a strategic thing in itself.
Sure.
Strategic diplomacy, I would call it.
Right, yeah, yes.
But who disobeyed it again?
Britain.
Not Germany.
Right. Yeah, it was the British. It was the British who deceived the Poles into believing that Britain would defend Poland against communist Russia too, right?
Yeah, but Russia signed this agreement with the Germans,
right?
And you would think, well, why are they agreeing? It was a strategic. That what I'm saying is it was a strategic agreement for the Germans,
right?
And of course, the Joe Stalin, Uncle Joe, never planned on adhering to it anyway, because he probably performed the cold Nidra.
Right? He probably did.
Right? No, for real, though. For real.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he's definitely Jewish. He, his father was Jew. His father is actually a Rothschild, unlike the rumors about Hitler. The likelihood that Stalin had a Rothschild for a father is extremely high. And I did a couple of shows.
Well, he was married to a Jewess, too, even though they poisoned
him. Three times.
And he was Mao Zedong's mentor.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's downright Jew communist. That's what Stalin was, right? And then don't be fooled about the putches of Jews. You know, when Stalin put certain Jews on trial, all those Jews, disloyal Jews, were replaced by loyal Jews, right? There was no, he didn't de-Judaize the Soviet Union when he did that. There were still Jews all around him. But there were some Jews he trusted and some Jews he didn't trust, right? So that's all there is to that, folks. right?
They killed him for some reason or other.
Right, right. Well, they were. He was afraid they were plotting against him, right? But the sad fact is that the Bolshevik regime was run by Jews to the bitter end. To the bitter end. And Stalin himself insisted on the law be passed that anti-Semitism be punished by death. So how is he anti-Jewish? He's not. Okay? They're giving you a simplistic explanation for the purges of disloyal Jews under Stalin. Okay?
And he was also a Freemason like his other two fellas. Right.
And so
like
was
Rosenfeld
Trotsky.
And like Churchill.
And Trotsky. And Trotsky too.
And Churchill and all three of them were Jews anyway. You got to think about that. What is the likelihood? What are the chances that you would have three of the top world leaders and they would all agree together and they would all be Jews and they would all be Freemasons?
Right.
What is the – I mean, what if you would have bet on
That's
something
just a coincidence,
that,
David.
What do you think the odds might be?
Don't you know? It's just a coincidence. There's no conspiracy.
It's amazing, is what it's absolutely stunningly amazing. And then you have the, you know, Rosenfeld's wife, who is Eleanor, who has her dream is to the time when America will have only brown people walking down on its sidewalks.
Like
not to mention she's a lesbian.
Right.
Not to mention she's a feminist.
Right. Exactly. Right. Commie Jew feminist. That's what she was. All right. All right. Italy. At the start of the war, Italy was Germany's strongest ally, but this did not last. By 1943, losses on every front made Italians unhappy about the war. The Allies invaded in July of that year, and on July 25th, Mussolini was ousted by a government that sought peace. The Germans could not let Italy surrender. They rescued Mussolini and used him as a head of a puppet government in the north. Italy was now effectively occupied by two opposing armies. Well, since they started out as the allies of Germany, and the Germans rescued Mussolini, I would hardly call that a puppet government. Germany did what it had to do.
Could we talk about something about this?
Yeah.
We have a listener named Maxwell Smart.
Okay.
Of course, that's not his real name, you know?
Sure.
And he's a nice guy. I guess he's an Italian. And he gets upset when I talk about the Dagos, I talk about the Jewish Italians.
Right.
And he says, well, are you against Italians and so on and so forth? Well, I told him, I answered him, and I said, the only thing I have against Italians is that they were useless and of no help to Germany during World War II. Mm-hmm. And I told him that the Italians in the north of Italy are blonde-haired, blue-eyed people.
Right.
But the people, I'd like you to reiterate, if you would, just spend a couple of minutes on what we've studied about this. I sent them some articles, but we don't hate Italians.
No, we don't.
We just know that the south of Italy, go ahead, tell them about the south of Italy, what we discovered.
Well, Sicily and southern parts of Italy were populated by Jews very early on following the Roman invasion, you know, in 70 AD, continuing to 133 AD. This is where a lot of Jews went. They went to Sicily. So the so-called Italian mafia is really a Jewish Sicilian mafia, right? And they're the ones who created the mafia and took over Sicily and southern portions of Italy, right? So,
but also, what else did you discover? We discovered this. This is something that will show you the blindness of history. You were taught in school that the Santa Maria, what was it, the Pinta?
Nina, Pinta, Santa
the
Maria.
Santa Maria, and what was the other one?
The Nina.
Okay, so those were sent over by Columbus in 1492. He discovered America. Lie. Absolute lie.
Right.
Okay, what he was doing was the same thing. This why I'm saying this is this connects to what we're talking about. See, in 1492, the queen, it was the queen, right? The queen of Spain. She said,
Isabella.
Either you become Catholic or get out.
Right.
So in 1492, some of the Jews headed to America, right?
Uh-huh.
With Columbus.
Right.
It has nothing to do with him, discovering America. But as the Jews always do, since they had a history in southern Italy, what Eli just told you about,
mm-hmm.
that was a place they could go.
Right.
And they went down there and they mixed with the Italians down that way, which also have a mix. You know that they have that kinky hair that's right. All, they look like they have Negro hair with, right. But they call them Dagos, which means, you know, like right. A Negro Italian is what
right.
It means. Okay?
Right. Okay.
And so basically they have mixed with right. Some peoples that were, you know, mixed peoples of themselves, and they've right. Also mixed with Italian people.
Right, right.
You know, and the Italians have mixed with Jews and other people.
Exactly.
I mean, when you see these Jews, the proof of the pudding is in the eating. And when you see these Jews in our country, these Italians, a lot of them have hooked noses.
Right.
A lot of them. Did you notice how rude Jewish women are?
Right. Well, Italian
have you noticed that Italian women are sexy when they're young?
Right.
I mean, the ones that are from that type of area. But
right.
When they get older,
right.
They grow a mustache and
right.
they want to take
now
over
you're
the whole
being
house
really
and they're
cruel.
Very loud and obtrusive.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
And I don't mean this as, I'm not trying to insult you.
No.
I'm trying
well,
to tell you, don't you understand what that means?
Right. The same thing happened to Spain and Portugal when they were bringing slaves from Africa up to Portugal and Spain and browning Spain and Portugal, which used to be white countries. Okay. So basically, so the southern portions of Europe, because of slavery and because of the penchant for Jews to move there, and for Arabs to move there and try to take over, you know, for about 1,000 years war between us and the Arabs, okay? So that's why the southern portions of Europe have become more brown than central and northern Europe, okay? And that's simple. Now, the proof of what you're saying is just watch the Winter Olympics and see the race of the men from the Italian Alps. You know, who are in the Winter Olympics, you'll see that they're Germanic, blonde-haired, blue-eyed men and women representing Italy.
Okay, let me just point this out one more time. I found out I was watching a cooking show, and of all things, he said the first wave of immigrants that came from Italy were blonde-haired, blue-eyed people.
Okay, all right.
The second wave was the one the Jews brought here
right.
to help them with their liquor business to create the underground
right.
mafia that
right.
was created through the P2 Lodge over in Italy.
Right.
All right. They mm-hmm. took these people from the ghettos of
right.
southern Italy and
yes.
they brought them to America. And what they did was they had prepared the Americans' women's minds with, I'm
yeah,
looking for
tall,
somebody
dark,
who's
handsome.
Tall, dark, and handsome. Now, the Italians aren't necessarily tall. But they
yeah,
could
that was
be
the image.
Construed as.
That was the image.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's the image they created, you know, to counteract the blonde-haired, blue-eyed man, the Nordic man.
So they brought right. them into the neighborhoods of the Irish people, and many people, Irish people mixed, Irish women mixed with these Italian men.
Okay.
Not the blonde-haired, blue-eyed now.
Right, sure. Well, it's proximity. You know, that's what was there, right? So this is what the Jews always do. And that's why they balkanized Europe with the Versailles Treaty. Okay? That's an ongoing process. You know, balkanizing the white races with non-whites. That's what they always do. Okay?
So we don't mean to hurt your feelings, but I must make something very clear. That when you're on a search for the truth, if you really love the truth, you may come up against a truth sometime that you're not going to like.
Right.
And I can't change that truth for you. It might happen to me too.
Right.
There's things you might find out about yourself you don't like. There's things you might find out about your church that you don't like.
Right.
Well, we like can't the Catholic, change the truth for
like
you.
Your pastor might be a pedophile.
I love people.
Right.
Go ahead. Eli.
Your pastor might be a pedophile and a homosexual. You know?
Yeah, but you just keep staying a Catholic.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, don't be true to Yahweh. Be true to the Catholic Babylonian institution.
Yeah, right.
And that will get you right into heaven. We can't say into heaven. That'll get you into Yahweh's kingdom. If you're true to a Babylonian institute,
yeah, you're not making it
and
the kingdom.
And these pedophilic priests,
yeah.
That's going to win you into Yahweh's kingdom. And if
right.
you believe that,
yeah,
I'm sorry. You know, I can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
You got to come out of that institution.
That's right.
Now, a lot of Catholics, I tell them about it. They don't like that. They love what I'm talking about. They love all the things I've been saying with the truth. But when it touches their
religion,
personages,
their religion,
then all of a sudden, I don't know if I like you too much anymore, Dave. Yeah, now you're finally talking about me. I don't like that.
Yeah. Well, you got to face up to the facts. The Catholic Church is a corrupt, totally corrupt institution. It can't be. It can't be reformed. Martin Luther tried, but he found out it couldn't be reformed. Okay.
But you're not supposed to be following men.
Right.
You're not supposed to be following institutions. You're supposed to be following Yahweh. Mm-hmm. You're not supposed to be following a pope. You're not supposed to be following any religion that it is. You're supposed to be following Yahweh, not men. Be true to Yahweh, not men. Don't be true to a Catholic church. I mean, I'm showing you all, we've been showing you these pedophiles, these Jews that are in there. They've taken over the whole thing. You wonder why the Catholic Church doesn't outlaw usury anymore? I mean, let's think about it for a while.
Yeah, because it's been Judaized. That's why.
they wanted to make sure that nobody in the Catholic institution was ever going to outlaw that ever again.
Right, right. Okay, so now we can approach the Tomato Bubble article, which is a little too sketchy. That's why I didn't want to start with it. So we did a lot of background information on why Hitler and the Germans, annexed Czechoslovakia, the Sudetenland of Czechoslovakia, annexed Austria, annexed the Danzig Corridor, because all these territories and parts of Belgium were all originally, Alsace-Lorraine of France originally belonged to Germany, okay, but taken from Germany by the Jews, totally illegally, totally unjustly, and Hitler was simply reclaiming from the Jews what they had stolen from the German people. That's
why they take that, Eli?
Exactly.
They took that because Germany has to import their food. They don't have enough farmland in Germany.
Yes.
They have a lot of trees and stuff like that, but they don't have a lot of farmland.
Also, Lorraine was the farmland.
Part of Germany that was making their ability to have food even less.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. Well, it's part of the starvation tactics against Germany, right? Right after World War I, and which, again, history books don't talk about. All right, so this is tomatobubble.com /Ribbentrop.html. The setting, or the headline is 1940, New York Times reveals why Germany invaded Belgium and the Netherlands. Okay? In other words, Germany had a really good reason for invading, not because Hitler wanted to rule the world, but because he wanted to, as we talked about the strategy already. But here's what they have to say. The setting. 8 months have passed since the Allied powers of Britain and France had declared war against Germany for its justified invasion of Poland. Notice that word justified. That is a critical word, and it's an accurate word. Had declared war against Germany for its justified invasion of Poland because the Polish government, in conjunction with the Freemasons and Jews, were exterminating the ethnic Germans in the Danzig Corridor. If you've never heard that before, take it from us, folks. That's the truth. That's the truth. You'll never read about that in any mainstream history book in your damned colleges and grade schools and high schools. That's not in your history books, but that's the truth.
We'll have more of that truth coming to them anyway, because we'll be doing flashbacks to other things that happened in World War I, even though we're progressing into World War II.
Right.
We're going to go back to the Versailles Treaty. We're going to go back to several things.
Yes, yes. And we need to do a thorough treatment of the Versailles Treaty. We will definitely do that. Next sentence. The Allies have ignored Hitler's numerous pleas for peace while amassing their armies in northern France, close to France's border with Belgium. Other than low-scale British and German maneuvers in Denmark, the great bloodbath known as World War II has not yet begun and can still be avoided. Okay, so point number one. All of the territory that Hitler claimed for Germany was justifiably Germany's. Okay? It was all justifiably Germany's. Never should have been taken away from Germany in the first place. Okay? Then point number two, the Jews, by creating this global depression actually gave Hitler the ammunition he needed to get rid of the Jew banksters out of Germany. Right? Okay. So the tiny states of Belgium and the Netherlands, both members of the Globalist League of Nations, claimed to be neutral. In reality, under the pressure and influence of mighty England and France, also members of the League of Nations, the two mini-states have been assisting the Allies in their preparation for an attack upon Germany. Bet you didn't know that, folks. Okay? So again, we're having to point the finger at the British. And at the French.
And the French.
Yeah, right.
Of course the French.
Who are still controlled by Jew banksters. All right? But Germany had gotten rid of its Jew banksters. That was the cardinal sin that Hitler had accomplished. By getting rid of the Jew banksters, he angered international Jewry, and that's when they declared war. Well, actually, going back to 1933, that's when global Jewry declared economic war on Germany. And that big headline, Judea declares war against Germany.
That's a psyop, again, yeah. I will mention, yes. Because the Jews have nothing to do with Judah or Judea, except they live, like, you know, if you want to call them American Jews, which is no such thing.
Right.
The Judea applies to them the same way America does.
Right.
In other words, they're Jews. They have nothing to do with Judea, except that they always follow us around wherever we go. They lived there.
Yes.
And John Hyrcanus caused some of that as well.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Germany had left the League of Nations in 1933, and it was all of those activities by Hitler in 1933 that culminated in global Jewry deciding again, on another war against Germany. Okay? That's the reality.
See the icon? See the icon
right there with
the father and the Edomite sign of control right there, the League of Nations that we talked about last week.
The five-pointed star inside the Pentagon, inside the circle of the League of Nations, right, 1919. So you can Google that, folks. Just go online and look for the symbol of the League of Nations. Yeah, that's the star. The red star in blue. Okay.
Well, yes, that's the Arnold Leese says that star is the Edomite star of control. That's why they changed it in Russia. They put it on the tanks in America, which shows that we were controlled by the Edomites. Yes, we were.
So
was still Russia. Are. So they had it on their flag, and so was Mao Zedong's communism. He had it on that flag as well.
Yes.
So that's the Star of Amalek. It's the five-pointed star upwise.
Yes.
But then they have the Pentagon that's surrounding it, which is the same way as our Pentagon, which makes the star pointing downwards, which is their father, the goat Baphomet.
Yes. Yes.
So it's fathers and the sons together in that logo.
Yes, yes.
The father being the devil, that is.
Yeah. If we have time, I would, not today, at some point in this series, I would like to discuss the attempt to kill Hitler in the bunker when that bomb blew off. I have a sneaking suspicion that Hitler was actually killed in that blast and a substitute Hitler was put in his place. I've had that suspicion for a long time. But I have been unable to, you know, because who knows? We do know that Hitler had several body doubles. He had several bodies. Yeah, they all do.
Why that would make sense, Eli, why that would make sense is because we don't understand why he didn't. The Germans had the fastest jet in the world. They could have won this war with no problem.
Right.
He wouldn't let them use those jets. They were the fastest jets in the world.
Right.
Nobody had a faster one. And he would not let them use them. There was two things he wouldn't let happen. That was the first one, which doesn't make any sense at all.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that makes sense is the general that was in charge of invading Russia wanted to go back, pull back, and, you know, that way they could regroup and then make, you know, launch forward. Hitler would not allow them to pull back for 1 second. This new Hitler, if that is the case, and it could very well be the case. And he would not. Those are the two things that you would question Hitler about. You would say, "Wow, I don't understand that."
Well,
he would not let them, the general who knew better than him,
right?
to retreat for a little while, not retreat for good, just retreat so that they could regroup and get some supplies.
Right. Well, would the same Hitler who let the entire British army go at Dunkirk be so stupid as to just throw the German military into harm's way, given the experience of Napoleon 100 years earlier,
and not use those fastest jets?
Right.
They could have just flown circles, and they could have done bombings with those jets and everything else. He wouldn't allow it.
So they never
used it.
Yeah. I just happened to be watching a documentary on the History Channel about that, about the attempt to murder Hitler, okay? And so they showed Hitler emerging after the bombing attempt, and the guy's nose, who's supposedly Hitler, was much broader than Hitler's nose, okay? And he had a pronounced forward slump in his body posture, which Hitler did not have. Hitler stood very erect. Okay.
I agree with you. I've seen the pictures of that bigger nose. That,
right?
Like as if he had a Negro nose or something.
Right,
you know?
Exactly. And
that's not Hitler's nose.
Hitler appeared after the bombing attack, right? So either Hitler was killed or he was constrained and imprisoned. I have a feeling that bombing attack was successful and the disinformation that he survived. Okay.
I don't think they could have let him die because they wanted to. In other words, as long as he's alive after the war and unknown, he's in somewhere in South America.
Yeah.
There's always that fear factor, you know.
Right.
And also, they used that thing where they said that people from the German Reich went down to South America. They used that to oppress people down in South America.
Well,
they sent people.
Yes.
You would see these shows on television where they sent these Nazi hunters down there to, persecute and find these people.
Right. Well, but what you were saying earlier and last week about Truman's comment about the Germans and Brits killing each other, and he said he didn't care who won as long as many of them get killed as possible. At this point in the war, the only strategy that the Jews had left was to make sure as many white people die as possible. Okay,
you can see that he concurs with the plan, and he's a Freemason too. Hey, there's another thing we just thought of.
Okay,
he's a Jew. You got a Jew as president, Jew Freemason,
right?
And we were talking about the odds of the three of them being Jews, and he dies, and he's replaced with a Jew Freemason.
Right, or a body
double. Now, what are the odds of that?
Right. But from that moment forward, German military strategy was not very good. And even Bertrand Comparé, he talked about the German jets and how they were misused in his study of the subject, but it never occurred to him that Hitler might have actually been killed or injured and held in confinement while a body double obedient to the Rothschilds took his place. Okay?
Yeah, because none of it made sense after that.
It did. It doesn't make any sense.
That
right?
is a good point, I will say, because it's a conundrum. It's something you think about, and you're like, why wouldn't he use those jets?
And that photograph of the dead Hitler that Stalin put out, that's not Hitler. I mean, you could see that you put a Hitler mustache on somebody and pretended it's Hitler. Everybody agrees that's not Hitler. That was another
one. Could have been Mo Howard.
Sure.
From the Three Stooges.
right. An impersonator, right?
He played a good Hitler, you know.
Yeah, he did.
I guess supposedly Hitler was upset about that.
Oh, really?
I don't know if that's true or not, but imagine them watching the Three Stooges, you know what I mean?
Right, exactly. Well, they would have known what the Stooges were all about, right? but here we see that you cannot believe history the way it's been told by the mainstream. You just cannot. These hidden facts are just going to be buried, all right? So, but continuing with this article here, in Tomato Bubble, all right, so Belgium and Holland were secretly conspiring with the Allies while claiming to be neutral. That's the important point we wanted to get across here. Even amidst its anti-German hysteria, the New York Times, in an effort to appear objective, did indeed publish Germany's side of the story in the form of statements issued by German Foreign Minister Joachim von Ribbentrop. It is an account that you will neither find in contemporary history books nor hear on a TV crocumentary. Okay? So, why? It was once published in the New York Times. Why not make it part of the historical record? Right? Well, because they don't want
you to... Because the New York Times is fake news.
That's right. And they don't want you to know Germany's...
And they were fake news then, too.
That's right. They don't want you to know Germany's side of the story. Okay? They felt pressured to in this case, but they have never, promoted this story ever since. Okay? That was May 10th, 1940. He continues, even if for the sake of argument we were to reject Germany's claim as being a false propaganda pretext for a war a la weapons of mass destruction, the question remains, why do the court historians continue to conceal such serious allegations from us? Why are we not given all of the data so that we can make up our own minds? What are they so afraid of?
I'll tell you the answer to that. Because then the Charles Krauthammer and William Crystal, the Jews, wouldn't have any job to explain what the news means to you.
Right, right.
And that is the truth. It's a joke, but it's true.
It is. No, it's funny, but it's true. Right? Because the Jews' media is a joke, folks. That's what you've got to learn. The next sentence, in the belief that there are two sides to every story, we are posting abridged reproductions of the May 10th and May 11th Times articles containing the von Ribbentrop allegations. A few bits of highlighted analysis are also included. The full originals can be viewed by copy-paste enlarging the article images. Okay, so, well, this is very small type from the type reproduction. I'm not going to even try to read that. But it goes down, it shows a photograph of Joachim von Ribbentrop, but a de-emphasized article from that same issue did present a different version of events, an inconvenient version that has long since disappeared from history. Okay, and then I think this is from that other article, Von Ribbentrop Charges Allies Plotted with the Lowlands by George Axelson, wireless to the New York Times. Berlin, Friday, May 10th, Foreign Minister Joachim von Ribbentrop at 9 o'clock this morning announced that Reich forces had launched military operations in Holland, Belgium, and Luxembourg to protect their neutrality. Okay, so I would, the only question I would have is, to what extent were these military operations, were they part of the Blitzkrieg that Germany employed in Poland, which the Germans had every right to reclaim, and in Czechoslovakia where they did not fire a shot, nor in Austria where they fired no shots either. Okay, but once Britain and France had declared war on Germany, all bets are off. All bets are off. You're talking global war now. Okay, so. Earlier, it was reported that German troops had occupied Maastricht, the Netherlands, and had landed contingents in Brussels, probably meaning parachute troops. Herr von Ribbentrop had said that Germany had received unimpeachable proof that the Allies were engineering an imminent attack through the lowlands into the German Ruhr district, wherefore the Germans felt compelled to take corresponding measures. In January 1923, France and Belgium invaded the Ruhr, while Germany was a peaceable country. Under assault by the Versailles Treaty, a vital industrial area of German bordering their own countries. The region is full of factories and coal mines. After the German currency had collapsed, the French and Belgians stole the Ruhr's resources in lieu of unpaid World War I reparations.
You see, and who caused the currency to collapse?
Yeah,
the
right.
German democracy called the Weimar Republic.
Yeah, the Jumar Republic, right. The Jumar
Republic. Yeah. Yeah. And okay. They just happened to know when it had collapsed, they knew to go right for those resources.
Yeah.
I wonder who might have told them about that.
Yeah, yeah. Von Ribbentrop said the time had come for settling the final account with the Franco-British leaders. France and Britain, this is a quote now from Ribbentrop, France and Britain dropped their mask. The alarm in the Mediterranean was a feint behind which the Allies were preparing an onslaught on German territory, which the Reich could not tolerate. And they had already invaded the Ruhr Valley once before. Okay. During peacetime in 1923, and now they were planning on doing it again. That is, the French and British. Okay. The article continues. The notes handed to The Hague and Brussels simultaneously with a shorter note to the Grand Duchy of Luxembourg just prior to their invasion by Germany accused the lowlands with having been overwhelmingly partial toward the Allies, adding that the attitude of the press was objectionable to the Reich. That is, their local press, no doubt. A memorandum similar in tone to that handed to Denmark and Norway last month stated, quote, "In the life and death struggle thrust upon the German people, the government does not intend to await an attack by Britain and France, inactively allowing the war to be carried through Belgium and Holland onto German soil. The government, therefore, has issued orders to safeguard the neutrality of the two countries with all the military means of the Reich." So my question being was, did the Germans actually make war against these countries or simply occupy them to forestall a French-British invasion? Okay.
Again, it was strategy, but those countries wanted to be. Yes, I don't know about Holland, but I know Belgium had. I don't think they have any real problem with it. I mean,
no.
Maybe, like it said, at first they didn't want it, but after they realized they wanted it.
Right.
But what's good right here is it says, in the life and death struggle thrust upon the German people. Who thrust that upon them?
Yeah.
Well, it was Britain and France, but it was the. Yeah. It was the people in America writing books like Germany Must Perish.
Yeah, Jews in America, right.
Which FDR was making sure everybody in his administration would read.
Yes.
You know, yes. And the Hutten Plan as Ursula Habermas had talked about.
Right, right. That reminds me, I'm glad you brought that up, because the fact is that FDR had made of war preparations on behalf of Poland long before America got involved in the war, okay? And one of the things that the Germans, we probably don't have time to discuss it fully today, one of the things that the Germans found out when they took over the Danzig Quarter territory, they found some, the Polish consulate was destroying letters between FDR and the Polish consulate in which it was shown that FDR was making secret plans with the Polish to attack Germany. So FDR.
We see the evidence that both of the Jews were doing that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then you had the third Jew that wanted to raid Poland, and then they would kill the people in the Katyn Forest and have that blamed on the Jews. I mean, blamed on the Germans.
Right. Right. Yes. So we can see here that there's so many vital facts left out of the historical record by you-know-who, which, you know, if you only tell one side of the story, you're going to think that that Hitler was an evil bastard, right? Which is what the Jews have convinced the world of. But when you look at the actual facts of who was oppressing whom, and why the German people had to defend themselves against genocide under the Versailles Treaty, it becomes obvious that Hitler was defending the German people against all of these illegal acts against the German people and was making his moves to prevent that from happening again. All right. So what was the response of France and France and Britain was to plan another war.
But he was also doing this for all of the rest of the tribes.
Right.
And he wasn't just Europe. Thinking of Germany.
They
were going to decimate communism.
That's
and they
right.
were going to do this even for their ally, even for their enemies, so-called enemies in the UK. They were going to take care of, like I said, the Freemasonic lodges.
Right.
Now, look what would have happened in England had that happened. Had they gone in there and destroyed the Freemasonic lodges and put those Freemasons to trial, England wouldn't be in the bondage it is today.
Right.
It's all Freemasonic bondage over there. That's the courts are all Freemasonic. The cops are all Freemasonic. The aristocracy's all Freemasonic, whether it's Duke of this or Queen of that.
Right.
I mean, Hitler would have had that taken care of. So you did yourself in, yes. UK.
Right. Yes. Furthermore, we have a few minutes left. Von Ribbentrop reads the paper. The German government has directed a memorandum to the Royal Belgian and Royal Netherlands government. By the way, these were monarchies, not democracies. It appears that the Treaty of Versailles did not make the world safe for democracy, in which the Reich government asserts that it is in possession of evidence and news which carries incontrovertible proof that the Anglo-French attack on Germany is immediately imminent and that this attack will take place against the Ruhr over Belgium and the Netherlands. Okay. And so it shows.
I wonder if after the war, Eli, I wonder if after the war they remained
monarchies?
If they were changed to democracies.
No, I think they're still monarchies today. I think they still
are. Do you really?
Yeah, yeah. Belgium and Netherlands. Yeah, I think there's a queen, a king and queen of Holland, right?
Oh, do you mean in name only? Like
yeah,
England?
Right, sure. Sure, in name
only.
Oh, okay,
yeah, all right.
But just like Great Britain is a monarchy in name only, it's actually a communist dictatorship, right? Just like America and just like every other Jew-controlled country is in fact a communist dictatorship, okay? So von Ribbentrop continues, the Reich government sets forth therein that it is reliably informed that England and France, in pursuit of their policy of extension of the war, decided in the near future to attack over Belgium and Holland. Okay, remember, it was Britain and France who had declared war on Germany. All right, they're the ones who started World War II. Again, Britain and France, not Germany. The German government has long been aware of the major British-French war policy. It consists of extension of the war to other lands and the misuse of their people as auxiliary mercenary troops of England and France. In other words, using Belgium and Holland, and we found out Norway as well. The British plan was to use those nations as their allies against Germany. The last attempt in this direction was the attempt to occupy Scandinavia with Norway's assistance in order here to create a new front against Germany. Only through Germany's intervention at the last moment was this intention nullified. Germany has produced documentary evidence, therefore, before the world public. And they also released the evidence they had from Poland that FDR was conspiring with the Poles to start a war against Germany. Okay.
Oh, so he was hung during the
yes.
The Nuremberg trials, after the rigged Nuremberg
that's
Nuremberg
right
trials,
yes.
Which I want to get to that someday too, and we will.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, yes. Did you see the picture of the Germans up in the center? They're riding horses.
Right.
You see what I mean about the
yes.
cavalry?
Right.
I
yes.
just want to make that point that, you know, even today, cavalry. I mean, with Napoleon, cavalry is important. I don't think they went into the Iraq war fighting with cavalry because sand. You know, there's
right.
no point
sure.
with cavalry to fight in sand.
Yeah.
But if you're fighting a rural war with the militia in America against an evil government or whatever,
right.
certainly the cavalry would be a very important aspect
absolutely.
Of your war
oh,
machine.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the cavalry is still – obviously, infantry, you know, was a big part of World War II. And, of course, the Air Force wound up dominating World War II toward the end, okay? So he states, sixthly, because we only have a little bit of time left, still crasser proof of the true Belgian and Netherlands attitude, however, is the deployment of mobilized Belgian and Netherlands troops directed exclusively against Germany. So, in other words, Belgian and Netherlands troops were actually being amassed on the border of Germany and getting ready to assist the British, if necessary.
That was a waste of time.
Yes. Okay. While at the beginning of September 1939, Belgium and the Netherlands divided their troops on their frontiers comparatively evenly, but parallel to intensified cooperation between Belgium and the Netherlands, general staffs and England and France, sometime later on the western frontiers, these countries were completely denuded of troops, and the entire Belgian and Netherlands troops were concentrated on the eastern frontiers of both countries confronting Germany. So they saw these troop movements of Belgium and Netherlands on the borders of Germany, and they came to what other conclusion could they come to, David?
Well,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. We're running out of time. Yeah. That's the conclusion I'm coming to.
Yeah, right? So the only thing they could conclude is that they were getting ready to fight Germany. Right? Von Ribbentrop is absolutely right.
One thing I'll point out is this. Another thing that they made sure that they had time for was they wrote that the Versailles Treaty, but they also made sure that they gave themselves enough time all the way till 1939 to build up their forces while nobody's looking.
Right,
so that they
exactly.
could shine against Germany, you
and
see.
Pretend to be the defenders, the helpless, defenseless, defenseless Brits and French, right?
You gotta be tough.
It's all about media and perspective and illusion created by the Jew media, folks. Thanks for listening, Praise Yahweh, Pass the Ammunition, folks. Hope you're enjoying this series. Yahweh bless.
There's Brother Eli. He stomped down many a snake in his day, and he ain't done yet. His younger brother, Dave, quicker than a horned toad. He can hunt down a snake's lie. Then there's Sister Jean. She can whip out a scripture faster than a Colt 45.